pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mayor Pruitt? Here. Mayor Pro Tem Holtzclaw?
Here.
Councilmember Bond? Councilmember Todd?
Here.
Councilmember Cavallari?
Here.
Councilmember Steckler?
Here.
And Councilmember Bond got a hold of me earlier today. He's at home with a really bad cold and is sparing us the deputy. So, may we have a motion to excuse?
I'd like to move that we excuse Councilmember Bond.
Second.
Second to excuse Councilmember Bond. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Passes unanimously. Next up is audience communication. We've received a number of emails, and I just want to let you know before we get started that we are not discussing the farm tonight. It's not on the agenda, and we're not discussing it. However, I think I would encourage everybody who's interested, I mean, you're welcome to speak to us tonight, and please get on the official records and want to be a party of records so that you're informed of everything that happens all along the way. So I would encourage you to do that as well as following on the city agenda. The farm will also not be discussed at the next meeting on February 5th, 4th, 5th. Because we're going to be doing interviews for the council vacancy. So that won't be there either. So just check the agendas, but if you're here tonight because you think we're making a decision, we're not. So it's not even on the agenda. So with that, let's proceed. And I have the first one. Somebody wants to talk to us about fencing? How do you say? Buwan? It's pretty. Okay, go ahead. Name and address.
So, my name is Bhuvan Chopra, and address is 2623 Seattle Hill Road. So, basically, we moved into the city a year ago, and the home that we moved in, there is a backyard, the fence is kind of falling on the backside, and on the side of the yard, there is only a small fence, because of which there is a lot of nuisance. There is rabbits coming in the summer. There was a spotting of bear twice, and recently we had a break-in from that place. So I just wanted to see an option to, get that fence corrected and the side yard, which is right now open, and anybody basically walks in. If that can be fenced. I have the map of my lot, and
honestly, me and my son cannot play in the backyard anymore because of break-in happened, and the beer, I saw beer twice. He's sitting just like, it is a mirror door to my kitchen, and I'm cooking, and he's like, I cannot go out. So this is like my little boy cannot play in the backyard. Irrespective of having a big house and backyard, we are really scared of just recently there was a break-in.
Bob, can you have the appropriate staff person contact him?
We will do that.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Yep, Don Stearns. Thanks, and thank you for your email.
My name is Dan Stearns, 3628 147th Place Southeast in Mill Creek, in a development called Webster's Pond. Here to speak about the farm, which I missed the communique about it not being on tonight's agenda. I'm only going to say that I oppose the farm as it has been presented so far in the information I've received. And one of the reasons I oppose it is because of what they call the workforce housing term that they have in there. And this workforce housing term has brought the type of, I guess you call it, citizens that stress our police, fire, and social services departments, causing a great burden on the city's finances. Kind of unfair to the rest of the citizens because our taxes end up going up. because of people that we don't think should be in our community. I moved to Mill Creek in 2005, primarily due to Mill Creek's reputation at that time, and its reputation has been compromised since, and it's not really fair to a lot of people who still live here in Mill Creek. I'm done.
Hello, I'm Karen Rickstad. My address is 16304 27th Drive Southeast, Mill Creek, 98012. And I am here this evening because I take exception with the views on diversity expressed by Councilman Member Todd in his 12/21/18 letter to the editor in the Mill Creek Beacon. As we know, currently the council demographics are 83% male, 100% white, and 100% over age 50. This is in contrast with the demographics of the community, which are just over 50% female, 74% white, and we have an average median age of 39.7 years, according to what I was able to find on the internet for 2016, I believe. Although I appreciate the slice of diversity that was expressed in the letter, the slice that showed a range of occupations and community involvement activities, I just don't feel like that is anywhere close to the definition of true diversity. And I can also appreciate that it can be hard to understand the impact of a lack of diversity when you're a benefactor of a societal system So what I wanted to do is just share an experience that I had, because that's what I can speak to. This is in the job that I'm currently in. There was a big promotion opportunity. By any objective standard, I was the best qualified person for it. And the person in charge of making the decisions was a 60-something-year-old white male, retired Air Force captain. And he came onto the floor with his big booming voice, tapped the shoulder of another white male over age 50, also a former Air Force person, and he said, "We need a big, strong man for this job." Well, look at me. I'm not a big, strong man. And that person got the job. It's not that he wasn't qualified, but like I said, by any objective standard, he was not the most qualified. And fortunately, within a few weeks, that situation was corrected, and I was installed in that job. But it was a very difficult situation, and I just did not appreciate being in that position, and I just felt that I had to speak out and say something. I do appreciate you sharing your views, and it gives us a starting point to discuss. So thank you, everybody.
John Hartquist.
Good evening. I'm John Hartquist. My address is the same as my wife's, fortunately. 16304 27th Drive Southeast, Mill Creek. I'm here in strong support of my wife and diversity. And she cited some statistics, but conspicuously absent is the representation of women. I am biased. I have three daughters, too. But and also there's conspicuously absent, there's no people of color. And Jared's left now. The age group is over 50. I think the council can benefit from diversity because I think it will add a lot of perspectives, and I think it will eliminate the possibility of groupthink. Groupthink. And I am concerned about it. So I would like to know proactively what the council has done in their search to ensure that we would get some diversity in the candidates that apply. And I'd like to know how the applicants are to date. It's the 22nd, and I guess you have it open until the 31st. Is that correct?
I believe so.
We don't do a dialogue during audience communication, but what we could suggest is
I would sure.
Our communications director can get in touch with you. Bob, is that okay? Can you look online to see what the process has been?
I would like an update on the process.
Right, we can provide more information, but online you won't find information about the types of candidates that have submitted applications yet. We won't release that until after the close of the applications, the close of the application deadline, which is the 31st.
And in the initial search, what was done to ensure that it reached a representation of the community?
Social media, website, advertisements, or press releases. So any way that we could provide some information to the community at large that we have this position in.
Okay, in closing, I would appreciate it that the council have a discussion about getting some diversity on the council. And I hope there be a discussion. Thank you.
John Raymer, 831 148th Street Southeast, here in Mill Creek. I'm just up here to ask about the Adopt-A-Ship program for the Ralph Johnson, newest DDG out at Navy Base Everett. Is the city of Mill Creek interested in doing an Adopt-A-Ship with the program? Are we interested in adopting the ship? If we're not, then please let me know so I can stop wasting the captain's time. If we are, then at least one council member, if you could please, they have an availability for a couple of hours on the afternoon of the 6th of February, and they would invite any council member and any city members out to come for a tour of the ship and see what the program is about. Again, it's a ceremonial thing. It's designed to increase public relations and goodwill between Navy personnel and local communities. It doesn't cost anything. It's just a letter signed by the mayor saying, you're ours, we're yours. We invite them to stuff, they invite us to stuff, and it's generally a great idea. I've heard lots of interest in it, but now we need to have at least one council member be willing to come out and visit the ship. So if you could, that's the next step. Please let Bob know, and he'll tell Joni, and she'll tell me. All right, thank you.
That's all I have signed up. Was there anybody else that wanted to talk to the council tonight?
Hi, I'm Teresa Logston, and my address is 4111 133rd Street Southeast in Mill Creek, the Vintage Senior Apartments. And I just wanted to say for the record that I have been communicating with Tom and the building group, and I wanted to commend, he represents Mill Creek really well. He was candid and available and gave information, and it was really helpful. We've been working on the parking situation there, and he's really good to work with, and I really like Mill Creek, and I just wanted to say that.
Thank you very much. Okay, anybody else to touch? Going once, twice? Okay, we have another opportunity at the end of the meeting, so we'll be available with that.
Next up is a presentation from the Snohomish Health District. Bob?
Actually, I'm going to turn it over to the Health District to make the presentation this evening. Mayor.
Extra.
Any button.
Hey, any button. I hit the any button. Hi, good evening. My name is Jeff Ketchel, administrator for the Snohomish Health District. This is Heather Thomas, our government relations manager, and we're here together tonight to update the council and staff and the public on what's been going on public health-wise here in Mill Creek and throughout Snohomish County. So in previous presentations that I've made here, we've talked about working together to make Mill Creek and all of Snohomish County a simpler, safer, and healthier place to live. I'll focus more on the simpler later in the presentation, but on the safer and healthier side, just some of the examples of some of the work that we've been doing. We do a lot of work with emergency preparedness and our healthcare system. In fact, we work with a lot of the hospitals and clinics, not only in Snohomish County, but throughout the North Sound in preparing for the next great emergency. We have responsibilities in order to mass vaccinate everybody within a week if there's a sudden outbreak of some horrible disease. And we exercise and practice these things regularly. On the healthier side, you may have noticed that down in Vancouver, Portland area is a substantial measles outbreak going on right now. You may recall last July we had our own measles outbreak here in Snohomish County, focused in on the Monroe and Everett areas, and we were able to contain that outbreak before it grew. It stayed within the visiting guest and their host family and did not transmit beyond that. Measles is the most contagious disease that we work with in public health. It is so contagious that if I have it and I leave and you come into this room 2 hours later and you're not vaccinated, you will get measles. But if you have both of your shots, you are 98% protected, and so the vaccine is extremely effective. Right now, down in the Clark County, Portland area, they have about 22 confirmed cases. One of those was hospitalized, mostly children, mostly unvaccinated. This all kind of blew up on Friday, and even though that's a several-hour drive away, I-5 is an easy pipeline for measles. And your health district has been talking amongst ourselves. Our health officer, Dr. Beatty, sent out an alert to the healthcare system to be on the watch out for it, and we are prepared in case one of those cases makes it up our way. On the simpler side, last November I celebrated a one-year anniversary of being the permanent administrator for the health district. And whenever you take over an organization, you start to peel back the onion and say, what's going on here, what's working well, what's broken. And I can honestly say that everything that could or was broken was broken. And we have spent the past year plus basically rebuilding an agency from servers that were so outdated they could no longer be updated, that if they had failed, we would have lost all of our information. Last year, we launched a new online system where you can renew permits, submit complaints, get a birth certificate, et cetera, all online. We now have a new online recruiting system, NeoGov, that many local governments use. We have a new IT service contract with Snohomish County. So now those databases are being protected adequately. We have a new voice over internet phone call system, which is saving us a ton of money. Our board and committee packets use Novus Agenda, and those are now available online. We have a new code publishing system, so now all of our sanitary codes are searchable on our website. We have a new records retention system, so all of our texts and voicemails and social media things are being adequately retained. We have an online learning management system that we just launched through our child care health program, where our child care health program is starting to train people online so they don't have to come all the way into the health district to be trained. We have a new website that Heather and her team launched in November. And we have a new financial system coming online here and up on the horizon. We definitely need an new electronic medical record. We're developing a new fleet management system, and the Rucker Building has been taken off the market, and we're working with our board to decide how to manage that asset best. It's been very busy. We've also been busy on the operational side of things. We've launched a new performance management system. Internal is the first performance management system that we've had at the health district. A lot of that uses a lot of quality improvement practices. How can we do things more efficiently, more effectively? We've also launched a new workforce development system. Our community health assessment will be done next month and released to the public. That has been about a one-year process, analyzing the top health issues in Snohomish County, something we do about every 5 years. And then the top issue or several issues will be developed into several community health improvement plans, what we're going to do about it. And lastly, we've just recently launched a new strategic planning process that we look to be completed this fall. And then I'm going to hand the opioids off to Heather. She has been coordinating our opioid response since we jumped into this back in 2017. Heather.
Thank you. So some of you may have heard of the Opioid Response Multi-Agency Coordination Group, or MAC group as we call it. There's been a lot of effort happening behind the scenes and starting to move forward into the public-facing area. In July of 2017, we did a first-of-its-kind point-in-time survey. I want to thank Chief Elwin and the Mill Creek Police Department for participating for the last 2 years. This was an opportunity for 1 week to collect how many overdoses were happening in Snohomish County. Up until about 2 years ago, the only way we had to measure how we were doing was the number of deaths in Snohomish County, and that was taking 18 to 24 months before we would get final data. A lot of efforts have been in place by the health district and Department of Health and other partners, so now we're getting more real-time data, things like the seven-day point in time. And then our health officer, which Snohomish County is very fortunate to have, he is a whiz with numbers, has done one of the first in the nation burden of disease analysis for opioids. So we've had the question, how much treatment does Snohomish County need? Well, until we can figure out properly how many people are having an issue with opioids, you can't figure out the right capacity. He went through and looked at First Watch data. So this is what our 911 dispatch system pulls into, law enforcement and first responders, and took July 2018 and went through all the records to find out overdoses that were related to opioids, and then cross-matched those with overdoses that were seen at Providence Hospital. There's a formula that was developed by CDC, and he took that model, and you see the pyramid here. Says for every one death, there are 10 recovery admissions, 32 emergency department visits, and then about 300 people that are dependent on opioids. So this is opioid use disorder. And then about 800 people misusing opioids. So misusing opioids is something as simple as your provider told you to take two pills and you take three. Your provider gave it to you for a surgery and you take it for some other type of injury. Or you take a spouse's or someone else's prescription not prescribed to you. By doing this analysis, Dr. Beatty came up with a range. So for Snohomish County, there are 5 to 10,000 people with opioid use disorder and 35 to 80,000 people with opioid misuse. So from here, we can use that to right-size the treatment capacity in Snohomish County. Working with providers, working with treatment programs. This is also a report that partners can use for applying for grants. We now have a number demonstrating the need, and we have an infrastructure in place to work through this. We'll be also working on targeting resources where there's most interest and most need. He looked at data to find out where are people answering, yes, I'm interested in treatment. He evaluated those that are being brought to the emergency department for an opioid overdose, those in the emergency department under withdrawal watch who are trying to manage symptoms and likely going into treatment, as well as clients who are at the syringe exchange. And interestingly enough, only 25% or so of the people in the emergency department for an overdose are interested in treatment. So where are those avenues where we can put the limited resources to connect people with treatment when they're ready? Some of the other efforts, again, Mill Creek, thanks to Joni, was one of the first to have these brochures in the community. We heard a lot at the forums that we've had over the past couple years, what can I do about it? Either I'm not struggling or I don't know anybody, what can I do? So a year and a half ago, the health district launched needle cleanup kits. Those are available in 16 locations across the county. People can pick up needles either on walks or at the parks. And then the health district and Snohomish County partner for free disposal of those. We've given out over 1,000 cleanup kits and ensured over 10,000 needles have been safely disposed in the county since that program started. Medicine security. Snohomish County was the 8th in the nation to institute a countywide secure medicine return program. This is the pharmaceutical industry paying for the disposal of their products. There are now over 40 locations across Snohomish County, little kiosks where you can drop off your medication for free. For those that are homebound, they can call an 800 number and have a pouch mailed to them, put their medication in the pouch and drop it off in the mail. We're partnering with schools to do more curriculum and community events. Some of you may have heard we piloted an event at Glacier Peak the other day. It's called Not in My House. It allowed people to walk through a mock bedroom trying to find where drug paraphernalia might be hidden in a teen's bedroom, and then talked with parents about how they can have the communication with their students or with their youth if there's concerns they're using drugs.
Heather, besides the
school resource officer, does the school have naloxone on all schools that they have it on the board?
Some do and some don't. We've been talking with some of the schools. Some are working to institute policies on who's allowed to carry. I know some teachers carry it regardless. There's been trainings provided. Some Edmond School District, for instance, had naloxone training for all staff. We have offered trainings in partnership with some parents, so we'll be doing some meetings with PTA groups. But as far as actual staff, it's a school-by-school and district-by-district decision. Oh, some of it is actually around the stigma about or the risk, perceived risk, if I administer naloxone to somebody. Naloxone cannot hurt somebody, so if it's not an overdose, you can't harm them, but you can save their life if it is an overdose. So we are very supportive of having naloxone on hand. I know some school districts have been looking at their numbers to find out if they've had overdoses. We've been partnering with some of them on that. Some of the efforts that we're doing at the health district is trying to make naloxone more widely available. So working with some pharmacies, if they don't carry it, to have a collaborative agreement under Dr. Beatty's authority, where I could walk into, say, Rite Aid across the street and pick up a prescription for naloxone without having my doctor prescribe it. We're also trying to work with medical providers. So if they are giving a prescription for opioids, they also write a prescription for naloxone. That way they can try to cover it through their insurance with a copay. On schools, we do have a staff member, thanks to a partnership with the county, with the chemical dependency mental health dollars. We went through and did an assessment of all the curriculum on the market across the country and came up with a list of the top four recommendations. And we're working with a few school districts, including Everett Public Schools, on options for integrating that curriculum in 2019-2020. And then the resource guide. This was a publication. We have a grant with the Washington State Department of Health. It's a CDC grant. And we were able to create the opioid resource guide. It has 10 articles, 10 things to know about opioids, and then a resource directory in the back. So if you're looking for housing, if you're looking for counseling, if you're looking for detox, all of this is in a paper format. There's some here at the city. And there's also an electronic version on the website, which is snohomishoverdoseprevention.com. We've done a lot of effort across the county to build on that treatment database. And so you can also go to the website and click on treatment and search for treatment providers by city or by specialty or by the type of insurance they take. A few other things that are pertinent here to Mill Creek. Dr. Beatty has done grand rounds at all of the hospitals, including Swedish Mill Creek. And we've partnered with them with a CDC grant. You might have heard the partnership we've had at Providence Regional, where they collect overdose data coming into the emergency department. That's expanded to Swedish Edmonds. We're excited to announce we are launching at Swedish Mill Creek this month. So we will be collecting data on the number of overdoses being seen here in Mill Creek and following up on those patients to determine what type of substance they overdosed on. If it's a prescription opioid and we're able to find the provider, Dr. Beatty does write a letter to that provider letting them know a prescription was used in an overdose. If we can identify their primary care provider, a letter goes to them as well saying your patient recently suffered an overdose. Wanted you to be aware and try to have a conversation. And then we're also working with the medical examiner's office to begin sending letters to those that have died from an overdose, letting their primary care providers know one of their patients had died. There's been a lot of effort with providers across the county on with pharmacists, veterinarians, and dentists. Each of them have a unique perspective in this. So we've had some focus groups to find out what are they seeing, how can we help, and there's been some action items that we've identified and are working on in the next few months. And then a big effort for our grant this year is neonatal abstinence. This is babies that are being born to moms that are using opioids. Snohomish County, unfortunately, has one of the higher rates in the state, so we're partnering with Providence to see what we can do to intervene sooner and then use best practices to help with the symptoms that the babies have when they're born. And we'll be hosting one of the first in the state maternal child health opioid conference at the end of March. I'll turn it over to Jeff.
Thank you. So Foundation of Public Health Services is something I've been working on since 2011, back when I was still at the Grant County Health District in Central Washington. What a Foundation of Public Health Services are one of those very basic public health services that every Washingtonian should be afforded. Back in 1999, when Initiative 695 passed, which was the first $30 car tab, eliminated the vehicle excise tax, which was the prime funding source for public health. Over the past 19 years, public health has been hand-to-mouth, paycheck-to-paycheck, trying to scrape together enough resources. The Snohomish Health District used to be about 240 people. We are now 126 FTE. We are a bare-bone organization that if there is a medium to large size outbreak in our community, I hesitate in our ability to handle it. We made a substantial request to the governor to restore public health funding in his budget. We did a study, and the gaps just to fill the infrastructure, communication, emergency preparedness, policy governance, communicable disease, environmental health and assessment, just these reinforcing capacities here, is the gap in the state is $296 million a biennium. It's substantial. We asked that for the governor, and he put $22 million in his budget for public health. We are pursuing public health funding through the legislature. We're not so naive to think 296 is in the ballpark. We've revamped that to $100 million for the biennium. And we ask that Mill Creek join cities such as Linwood, Everett, Granite Falls, and others.
What?
And Arlington and the Economic Alliance in Snohomish County to advocate for public health funding for local public health. If you have a legislative agenda or if you are meeting with legislators, just to mention, hey, we support foundational public health services, funding for public health, I would greatly appreciate it. The 805,000 people who live in Snohomish County will greatly appreciate it by the fact we have an agency capable of meeting their needs. That is all, unless you have any questions for Heather or myself.
So help me out, Jeff. Exactly what do we say to our legislators? We support
foundational public health funding for foundational public health services. So again, this isn't nurse family partnership. This isn't fancy. This is basic communicable disease prevention and response, immunization promotion, environmental health complaint investigations. There's
the number of $100 million.
$100 million for the biennium. It's the public health system. So our ask is done in partnership between all 35 local health jurisdictions, the state health department, tribal public health, and the state board of health. It is a four-piece public health system because, as we're aware, just like we've learned, measles outbreak has crossed the state line. These types of diseases cross all kinds of political lines.
I think it makes more sense if we ask for it. They would, you know.
Yes.
Talk to you guys, but we support this.
Yes. Yeah, and it. Thank you, Councilmember Todd. And this will be especially important when the budget time starts. We do have a policy bill that supports this right now, but it's the budget. It's going to be during budget creation where this is going to get hot. So. Yep.
Right. When we're down there talking about city priorities, this is also a priority for city, county, everybody. Thanks.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Yeah, great presentation. You guys always do a very informative, succinct job here. I love that. I've been an advocate and a supporter of the Safe Needle Exchange programs that we have throughout the county, as well as the city has in most of the cities. Has, by putting that along with education, has that driven the number of HIV, hepatitis, skin infections, et cetera? Has that driven the number? Have we put a dent in it yet? Have we driven the numbers down, trending downwards?
Clarifying question. When you say Safe Needle Exchange, do you mean needle cleanup kits or needle exchange where somebody who's using drugs brings in their dirty needles in exchange for clean ones? The latter?
Yes.
We're actually seeing an increase in hepatitis C. Hepatitis C rates have been going up. Current needle exchange activities in Snohomish County are limited to a single nonprofit operated by two people. So I'm trying to walk a fine line here.
Well, let me see if
yes.
I can clarify.
If you want.
So are the numbers going up just because the cases of heroin abuse is going up? I mean,
So a few years ago, The biggest population with hepatitis C was baby boomers. And you may have seen ads saying if you're a baby boomer between these ages, you should get tested because there's a strong chance you may have it. Now we're seeing a double hump where not only is it the baby boomers with hepatitis C, but also the 20-somethings who are injecting drugs. And the hepatitis C rates, we don't have the slide, I can definitely send you the data, has been definitely going up year by year by year. And that's sort of an indicator of the opioid crisis in the county getting worse by the number of hepatitis C cases that are increasing, especially in the 20 to 30-year-olds. So, but right, yes. However, if you're actively injecting drugs, there's not many doctors who will prescribe to you the treatment.
One provider in the county.
The cure, yes. So
the other hiccup, sorry. One other note about hepatitis C is we have staff that do hepatitis testing at the jail, at Denny Juvenile Justice System, and then at the Syringe Exchange. It's just the initial rapid test to find out if they have antibodies in their system that's been exposed to the disease. They need to go on for further testing. We don't have the funding to do that. We were given a small grant to implement that at the jail. So if they test positive while they're a guest at the jail, we can do the follow-up rapid test, which does take a few days to complete. But otherwise, those that are seen at Denny and at the Syringe Exchange are given a card saying, please see your healthcare provider to do follow-up testing. Meanwhile, they're out. Many do not follow up. So that is one area with additional funding that we would like to be able to do is that the full RNA testing. One other opportunity with the Syringe Exchange, I think to your point of demand, the number of needles that they've been collecting has gone up year over year. So in 2017, they collected over 2 million needles, and it's a one-for-one exchange, so that means they collected 2 million dirty needles. But they've also been a great partner with the health district and the Drug and Gang Task Force. So several months ago, our grant at Providence, they were looking at the opioid overdoses and noticed a pattern. They had seen a spike in the number of patients coming in with what they thought were Percocet 30 pills, and they turned out to be counterfeit pills that were laced with fentanyl. We alerted the Drug and Gang Task Force and the Syringe Exchange. The Drug and Gang Task Force had an idea of what was being sold, but they had not been able to find the pill. So the Syringe Exchange asked their clients. The clients actually brought forth some of the pills and turned it over to the Drug and Gang Task Force so that they could verify that's what they were purchased, what they could purchase on the street. And then we created warning cards that were distributed to fire and police, hospitals, and the Syringe Exchange, letting them know that we've seen an increase in fentanyl. So these are some of the ways our systems are starting to collaborate more.
And also you asked about HIV. So interestingly, HIV has been relatively flat in Snohomish County. So while we've seen this increase in Hep C, HIV has been relatively flat. Down in King County, however, there was an HIV cluster amongst drug users recently, but it did not translate to, so far, to anything up here. Another thing we're watching very closely is hepatitis A, which is not transmitted through needles, but rather unsanitary conditions. And you may have seen outbreaks of among homeless groups down in Los Angeles and San Diego. And I think King County was having some issues as well, but we haven't not seen that up here yet. So surveillance is key. And that's a...
I saw your press release on the first flu.
Yes.
Do you have any idea of how effective the flu vaccine was this year and how many people got
it? I think it's too early yet to tell. I will ask that of Dr. Beatty, who is a real expert on influenza. And as soon as we know, we can definitely share that out. Correct.
How long are those vaccines good? Because for some
forever. Forever. It's not like the whooping cough or pertussis where some of the immunity wanes over time. The two shots of MMR, which is measles, mumps, rubella, you're good. My 10-year-old son was asking me about that last night. I was telling him about the measles outbreak, and he says, "Do I need another shot, Dad?" I said, "No, you're covered."
There's an interesting op-ed in the Herald. I'll be quick. Interesting op-ed in the Herald. Last day or two or three, essentially stating, well, not really stating this, but alluding to the fact that it's on the rise again, where folks are spreading the narrative that the inoculations ahead of time are not good, that you don't get them, that you don't know what's in it, and all
Yep.
So
vaccine, we call it vaccine hesitancy. And it has been labeled a top 10 priority for the World Health Organization in 2019. It's become such a global issue. In fact, just a little bit more than a decade or so ago, measles was done in the United States. We declared victory over measles, and suddenly we had the big outbreak at Disneyland and outbreaks in New York and Minnesota and now here in Washington. All it takes is, and a lot of these outbreaks happen because one case came in from overseas, interacted with a group of people who had chosen not to vaccinate their children, and boom, you have an outbreak. And one case of measles is an outbreak because it is so contagious. So we have a tiny immunization program, which is a nurse and an educator and somebody who coordinates the Children for Vaccine for Children program. And we work to promote vaccines, and especially in the schools, where schools are that first line of defense, and working with school nurses to make sure the records are up to date and make sure kids are being compliant with the laws regarding being vaccinated or having an exemption on file. I wish we could do more.
Yeah, I was shocked to see that narrative is still being thrown out there, that there's still a lot.
Oh, it's very powerful. Very powerful. Thank you so much, Mayor and Council. Appreciate our time. Always.
With that, we're now up to on the agenda the public hearing on the amendment to the Adopted Development Agreement between the City of Mill Creek and Hillsborough Apartment Street located at 4111 on 130 3rd Street Southeast. Planning Manager Tom Rogers will be presenting. So I would like to go ahead and open the public hearing now at 6:43. And Tom, go ahead.
Thank you, Mayor, member of the City Council. For the record, I'm Tom Rogers, planning manager for the city. Before you tonight is a request to adopt an ordinance that would authorize the city manager to enter into an amendment to a development agreement, which is a contract between the city and the developer of Vintage at Mill Creek. If you recall that the original contract was adopted on October the 6th in 2015. And following that, the binding site plan was approved by the hearing examiner and construction commenced. During the construction of the project and in response to some concerns that the senior center had expressed to the city, there was a verbal amendment to the contract, or an understanding between the city and the developer, to transfer 500 square feet of space that had originally been set aside for the police department to the senior center. And to go back, the original agreement had two provisions to get space for the city or the senior center. There was 2,800 square feet that was going to be set aside for senior center and 500 square feet to be for a police precinct district. So the verbal agreement was made, the plans were changed, and what you see out in the field today is a larger senior center. It has the original space, plus it also has a 500 square foot room down the hall, which is used as a flex space, it's an area that they use for their programming. So they can provide more of the programs similar to the amount that they provided before when they were next door in City Hall North. This verbal agreement was reported in writing by the city manager almost exactly a year ago, on January the 23rd of last year. You received, it's the last attachment in your packet, was a senior center update. And you'll see in there is a acknowledgement that this agreement occurred. So that's when the council was first made aware of this. The contract itself and the state law require that changes to development agreements do need to be approved by the city council. They can't be changed by staff. They can't be done verbally. That's not the best practice. So what's before you tonight is a very straightforward thing, is to memorialize the agreement that was made and what is out in the field today. So with that, the recommendation from staff is to adopt the ordinance that was prepared by our city attorney that would allow the city manager or authorize the city manager to enter into the change to the development agreement. And with that, I'd be glad or be happy to answer any questions.
Thanks, Mayor. One of the reasons I think it was brought up on the agenda last year is because I was kind of beating the drum of where's our police precinct. And one of the questions I had is, I or we, the council, only found out about any after the fact, after the supposed square footage was allocated by Vintage to the seniors and the police precinct was taken out. So to memorialize it now, I still don't have all the facts of the agreement. I mean, what's the square footage that the seniors have now?
The actual number is what has been placed. You know, what we did, we took to make the amendment, we changed the 2,800, I think it's to 3,413 square feet. So that's what they have now. They have 3,413 square feet. And the paragraph that was related to the police precinct is basically struck out. So those are the changes that are made. So the 500 square feet went to the senior center, and the 500 and the police department does not have a precinct office in that development.
See, personally, I think now would be the time to enter into a negotiation for that police precinct, especially since they're looking to memorialize it. Because there's a lot of empty storefronts up there in Vintage. I don't think a lot of the public knows that. And I'm still asking, where's the precinct? That's just me.
Well, I just want to be really clear also. This developer has not asked to make this memorialization. It's a follow-up on staff's part, city staff, to acknowledge what happened. Anything going forward certainly could be approached with the developer. To have future discussions, this is just basically to sort of set the record straight to make sure that what's in the agreement makes sense and is truthful, and also to have the council be aware of that and to make that action, because the council is the only one that is authorized to make changes to that agreement.
Is the original agreement attached here? I didn't see it.
Yes, it is. It is. It's the second exhibit, ordinance number 2015-798. And then that's what authorizes the city manager to approve it. And the contract is the third exhibit, contract 2815-1231. So there's 40 pages in the packet. It's a rather large packet, but we thought you may want to see all the backup information.
Question for the police chief. Do we still need an East Precinct?
We do have in our plans, on the drawing board, a use for that space. It's our intent, and it has been for the last couple of years, once we get that space, to have that be our base of operations for our volunteer programs, where our citizen patrol volunteers have an opportunity to work out of. As we build our citizen patrol program, a good number of those volunteers are not interested in patrolling in cars. A lot of them are interested in providing service at a counter, and so as we develop that citizen patrol program, it's our hope to have that space be that base of operations, as well as a location for our officers to write reports, meet folks from the community, and be in and out of.
Senior Center using this additional space now?
Yes, they are, absolutely.
Complicated at all.
And I believe that the lease has been changed as well, so I think the senior center is in there and has some understanding for that space. So I think it would be more than...
So how much space do they have over
the... I don't recall. It would be the same amount of space that we gave to the Chamber of Commerce, if anybody has that number off the top of their head.
I may have more after Councilmember Todd, but I'll let him go.
Okay, Councilmember Steckler, then
Todd. Yeah, Don, since I'm one of the younger ones here that came in after this, just after this decision was made, so I kind of have some questions that are top of my head. As I understand it, we built the space for the senior center, we built the space for the police, a satellite precinct, which I do like the idea of the, personally, I like the idea of the exposure and identification and taking the name of Mill Creek out there into that community. I see a value in that. Yet there was a decision made somewhere along the line to donate that space over to the seniors, and I often wondered if it was because they were getting less space, but it seems like that wasn't the issue. Just they wanted more space, or maybe the police didn't want the space. I never really got the answer as to why we gave this space to the senior center. And it sounds to me now that it was an actual increase to them of their space. So Council Member Pro Tem Holtzclaw brings up a good point. Are we going to agree to this, and then is the police department going to ask again for a satellite, a precinct out there? I'd like to have that discussion now before we, you know, right now we haven't memorialized this. Somebody verbally one time said, hey, let's let the seniors use the police area, but now we're going to memorialize it, so it's just a senior center selection, and if we're looking at putting police in there, it's going to be a new acquisition, a new cost, and I don't know if there's a desire for that. If there is, I think I'd like to have that discussion before I memorialize this, but maybe I'm just, you know, complicating an issue here, so I defer to some of the council members, but I'm kind of going, I don't know, I'd like to have a little more discussion here before I went ahead and memorialized this. Maybe this is the right thing to do.
Just a little bit of history to respond. While the city, well, the senior center next door only had 2,300 square feet, if that's the number, they actually effectively had more than that because there were other rooms that were not occupied that they used, the conference room, one of the conference rooms down there. So they had, even though it wasn't technically their space, that they had a key in their locked area. So they had probably a comparable amount of space. From the history, these discussions happened early enough in the construction that the police department never did get the TI or the tenant improvements or anything. And so it was always built out sort of at the per the requirements of the senior center. So it never effectively was the police station. Maybe the city attorney might have some comments on this, but I know that the verbal contract did occur. I mean, I wasn't, as a staff member, I became aware of it, but I did hear the offer made back and forth in exchange, and so the staff acted upon that. I don't know if it's easy to go back on that and then try to renegotiate that after the fact. There are some vacant spots in that building right now that if we wanted to pursue that further, that might be a separate conversation, but I think the contract has been made. So, even though it's not on paper yet.
But the contract doesn't go through until the council
approves
the agreement.
That's the way it's supposed to go. Yes, here we are. We're trying to retroactively put things in the right place. Yes.
City attorney.
Thank you, and I'm going to disappoint you because I was not involved in any of the prior activities related to the vintage. I was simply asked to draft the ordinance and the amendment that would make it all written instead of whatever verbal agreements might have existed. I'm happy to go look at that with the staff after the fact and come back to you with a better answer, but tonight I can't tell you anything about how whatever happened. All I can tell you is that this is the mechanism that would correct the vintage development agreement to match what's on the ground there now.
Yeah, the only reason I throw that out to you is because some of us had questions then, and
yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, we're kind of getting off topic, but I know why we're getting off topic. And people are dancing around this, trying to dance around this being politically appropriate. Maybe it would be less politically appropriate. In January, attachment 4, January 23rd, 2018, the Senior Center Conference, That was when our previous city manager, Rebecca Palazzotto, came to us and said, here's what's gone on. Plan has changed from the smaller amount to the larger amount of space. Kind of outlined the background, talked about the developer's investment in this, and the developer, at his own behest, put quite a bit of dollars into this, a lot of dollars into tenants' improvements to the benefit of the community in general. At the time, if we, the seven of us, didn't like what was going on, that probably was the right time to unravel it. At this point, we are more than a year later. It's hard to unravel a decision that was made by staff, and I think it was Rebecca Palazzotto. I wasn't there, but I'm guessing from what everybody's saying, she as city manager made this decision. It was already done by the time January 23rd came around, but if we wanted to slap somebody upside the head, we should have slapped somebody upside the head back then. The question now is, are we good to the word or appointed representative at that point in time? You know, it's city manager Palazzotto made this agreement to do this, and for us to change that now, I think it's too late. It's, you know, it's only as good as her word, but it's here we are more than a year later. I think what this matter is tonight, what the public hearing is about, is to have this kind of discussion, but also just to really get down to codifying what has already happened, and just let's get it right. It never should have been done without coming to council. It did happen. It's hard to unravel at this point, so that we're being asked to officially document what's happened, and I think it's important that we do that. I think we need to go ahead. If we want to later have a separate discussion about getting a good deal at Vintage or someplace else in the community for a precinct office, that's a separate discussion, but that's not really germane to what we're talking about tonight. Thanks.
I'm just trying to understand who the developer didn't request this change, correct? So are we trying to memorialize an agreement Rebecca apparently made with the senior center or with Mr. Patterson?
With Mr. Patterson.
But he doesn't care if this change is made.
No, he will sign it because this is the deal he has agreed to verbally and implemented in the field. So we told the developer, Mr. Patterson, that we're going to bring this to the council to memorialize the contract that he already was under the understanding he was in.
He stated another way, I think the developer believes that he has fully fulfilled his obligations under the development agreement with the amendment by the former city manager. And for the city now to request additional space or the initial agreement would be extra, or at least would be viewed as an additional component to what he's already completed on site.
I think Councilmember Todd hit it on that.
I mean, a lot of people on both sides, I guess, should have caught this. If it was pending council approval and we're having this conversation now, then it's definitely germane to what we're doing now and going forward. I think it's worth the city attorney looking at it. I'd like to dissect it a little bit. I don't ever remember to agreeing to this, and this was an after the fact, hey, by the way, we did this, here's what happened, conversation.
Should we hear from the public and then conclude our discussion?
With our questions.
So let's go ahead and open up the hearing for the public comment, and we don't have anybody signed up. So did anybody want to talk to the council about this? Will? Name, address, 3 minutes.
Nelson, 14925 29th Drive Southeast, Mill Creek. I didn't intend to say anything about this subject, but I do recall there was a brief conversation between the former city manager and the council. It might have been 15 seconds, 10 seconds, but that was about it. It was very brief. And I guess she went ahead and did.
I'm going to double dip in and speak again. Teresa Lux, and I live at the Vintage. I was told when I leased at the Vintage that there would be a police substation there, and that was a good thing to me. And I know a number of other residents, but I'll only speak for myself, would like to have that and there to be a police substation there. I completely appreciate what was said, and I do think you probably should, you know, honor something that was done and is already done, but given still, we would like to have a police substation there.
You know, Councilmember Todd said it. The developer's done their job. Right or wrong, our representative, who was representing us, got an agreement, and I don't think that's an option to go back on that. I guess what I'm thinking is to memorialize this, to let the developer know that they have met the requirements. I understand that. To memorialize this, though, with the senior center, I just wonder if there is that still the right opportunity, or is there a better opportunity to provide that exposure of a police satellite office out there. Could we go back? Can we convert that space back if we wanted to take it back, if that was a council decision? If not, I don't think we can renegotiate a new deal with the developer. I mean, it would be a brand new deal with the developer. They've met their requirements. I totally agree with that, totally support that, and it would be wrong of us to try and tell them, you know, anything but that. But I guess what I'm still holding back is I do like the idea of the presence out there. I do like the idea of the exposure out there. I do like the idea of taking part of Mill Creek out into the community more from the town center. So I kind of hate to shut the door on that by memorializing this agreement and saying, okay, it's all senior center, police station out. I do want to support the developer, and they've met their requirements. I'm wondering if we're closing the door on an opportunity to maybe use that space for a police presence. And is that the right thing? And, you know, maybe that if we had had a chance to make that decision, would we say, no, we don't want to turn that over to the senior center. We want to use that space, or we want to convert maybe an additional outside space for more exposure to a police presence. Would we have wanted to do that? Definitely I support what Councilmember Todd said. The developers met their requirement. Yeah.
I think that the recommended action to memorialize this agreement doesn't close the door on future opportunities.
Okay.
There's additional space in the existing Vintage. There may be an opportunity in the upcoming development. There are other options. Staff is aware of the desires, and we share them. And I don't think that accepting this is going to close the door for anything.
So if we wanted to convert that space back to a police presence, we could do that.
Not that particular space, but there is other square footage in that building, is what I'm saying.
That was originally designed to be a police.
It wasn't designed to be. It was just a 500 open box that really hadn't been implemented or designed. Not that much design went into it, but there are other similar spaces that could be used in that same way. And there may be other opportunities on not that property, but other properties where a similar thing could happen.
But the space is free, the 500 square foot space is free now, but other space in the future we may have to delay.
Yes. Right. Well, that we have to negotiate. That has not been determined yet. But I'm just saying the opportunity is there, and there may be other opportunities going forward.
Now I'm confused. The was incorporated into the senior center.
Okay. I'm just saying there are other vacant spaces in that building.
Okay. So, Councilmember Stecor, I don't know if you're aware that this is the same developer that's bringing the farm to us in a couple weeks. Okay. What discussions have we had on these other opportunities in the building? And the reason I ask is for a couple reasons. I'm trying to find the dang ordinance. I'm wondering if, well, first of all, Mr. Patterson's going to be here in a couple weeks, I assume. So we would have the opportunity to have a discussion with him. But I'm wondering rather than, I'm sorry? No, the proposed ordinance with the amendment to the development agreement that would strike the provision dealing with providing the space for the East Precinct. I'm just wondering if there are potential other options, if rather than striking that, we had some language that we would meet and, you know, discuss other options for an East Precinct at the Vintage rather than just striking it altogether. So not committing him to provide us that additional space, but to just have further discussions about other opportunities at the Vintage, should there be any.
I would say that the parties always have the opportunity to amend the agreement at any time. What we're attempting to do this evening is simply mirror what has actually been done in the field. And so, again, it doesn't close any opportunity off, but I think we both have the opportunity to amend either that agreement or to look at potentially a police precinct in a future agreement.
Fair enough.
Thank you.
Whatever the meeting is, on the 12th, right? I think it's scheduled for the 12th.
At this point, we're anticipating the February 12th, but that could be subject to change as we're still negotiating the development agreement with him. Yes.
Here soon.
Soon.
Yeah, no, I understand.
Bob, I just want to clarify what you're saying. So we signed this, we agree to this change, and that doesn't preclude us from deciding later on that, you know what, we do want to go back to using 500 of that square feet for the police precinct. We can do that, right?
Absolutely. Well, it would be a voluntary agreement with both parties. You'd have to have one, a willing landlord or a willing leasing, a lessor, that would want to enter into that type of an arrangement.
And that's Mr. Patterson?
For the Vintage, that's correct, and also the same for the farm if that moves forward.
So if we leave this, then we still have that window of opportunity without his decision, right?
Well, no, he hasn't agreed to it. He has fulfilled his obligation by
and improvements. Yes.
On the 500 square feet that was supposed to have been for the police satellite station, the city has told him we don't want that as a police satellite station any longer. We want that to be used as an additional senior center space. So, in his view, and I would agree that he has met that obligation because the city's directed that 500 square feet elsewhere. You no longer have an additional 500 square feet in the Vintage of which to utilize for city use.
Correct, but in the senior center, we do have a 500 square foot section in the senior center at the Vintage that originally was going to be the police precinct.
You no longer control that. Your only development agreement obligation is that they provide that space to the senior center, and then that is a lease between the senior center and the developer.
I should redirect my question. We signed this thing. It's a whole new ballgame by putting the police station in there. Whole new ballgame.
Well, I think it's a whole new ballgame now, quite frankly, because he's already met his obligation. Right. If you don't sign this agreement, the other option is you could, I suppose, file a claim for him to put 500 square feet of police station in there. But I suspect he'll say that's already been modified by the prior city manager.
Well, if we don't sign this, then we would have the ability to convert 500 square feet into a police precinct, correct?
Well, by a voluntary agreement, much like you would, you'd go out lease space from any landlord in the area, and you could occupy space.
And we convert 500 square feet of the senior center?
Again, you don't control the senior center space any longer. Your only obligation was that he had to provide it to the senior center. That's not yours to control or yours to utilize.
Thank you.
Okay.
I am going to make a motion that we approve Ordinance 2019-845, approving an amendment to the development agreement between Vintage at Mill Creek and the City of Mill Creek to memorialize reallocation of space from the police precinct to the senior center.
I'd second that.
Somehow, typos crept into the ordinance, and we should just correct them right now before you vote. There are three of them, and they're on page 2, in section 2, the last full line. It references RCW 36708.170. It should be 36.70B.170. So the 8 should become a B, and the same change needs to be made in the third whereas clause up above on that same page, where it says City Council finds that the proposed modification to the original DA as requested by the developer attached to as Exhibit A is consistent with blah de blah, and then it says RCW 36708.170. That also needs to be a B. And the last typo is at the end of section 2 down below where we just were, and there's a colon at the end of that line for some reason instead of a period. So if the motion maker and seconder would agree to include those in their motion, then we can redo the ordinance and get it signed.
So agreed.
Agreed.
Aye. Very much for your time.
Yes, Mayor. At the January 8th City Council meeting, we discussed. Okay. Okay. So during the January 8th study session, staff presented council with the 2019 community events. And during that meeting, staff had identified three changes from what had historically been promoted as community events and conducted as community events and for council consideration. And so we're back again this evening from that study session seeking your consideration on the potential changes that are identified in the agenda summary. And those changes include, well, I'll allow the communications director to give you more detail, but generally it's the Mill Creek Days. It's the introduction of a new community event, Mill Creek Days, and then focusing on Memorial Day for commemorative ceremony. Rather than a parade, and then a farmer's market changing the dates from its former date to Tuesdays. And so those are the three changes that the staff had identified for council consideration during the January study session, and we're back this evening looking for direction from the council. And I'd ask the communications marketing director if she wanted to add more information for council.
No, but I'm happy to answer your question.
Okay.
I do. Trying to pull it up here. I like the idea of Mill Creek Days. Here's my concern, and I think this was an idea that Councilmember Cavallari may have floated last week. We're less than 4 months away from an event that would be a week long and become hopefully a signature event of the city. My concern is our ability to pull that off this year, and I'm wondering whether or not this needs more than 4 months planning to do it successfully. So I'm wondering if we should stick with the Memorial Day event this year, but move to this week-long event in subsequent years, starting in 2020. So I'm interested to hear your comments on what we have done to date to plan for this, and how do you think we're going to be able to pull this off in under 4 months?
Well, I'm very confident. I have an excellent team, first and foremost, and my team has put on a series of events throughout the year, most of them in a very short time frame. So I'm confident in their ability to do this, to deliver a very solid set of events. But we need to keep in mind that Mill Creek Days is not solely baked on the back of the city. It is done in partnership with our business community and other folks in the city. So, for example, when we talked about the concept of financial workshops, taking advantage of the numerous financial institutions, that is where we would reach out to our connections and have them help us develop programming. Same with a health and wellness thing. Last year, we actually started in the process of developing a health and wellness fair. We ended up having to postpone that opportunity just due to some of the changes that were happening at the city last year. So we have reached out to different contacts for that specific series of things that were very interested in partnering with us. In terms of what the city has to offer on this, we talked last time about a recreation event the week that we would kick this off on the 11th of May, and that is something my staff can easily do. And especially once we get through basketball season. So that will be, I've talked to my staff and they're comfortable with that. But as far as the parade goes, we have John Raymer in the room as well. This is about the time he would have normally started planning for a parade that happens about 2 weeks later. So the timing isn't significantly different in terms of planning a parade, but we also have community members that are interested in being part of a community-centric parade, so this is another opportunity to build on those partnerships that we've already started to develop.
Information. I don't think anybody's on board yet or has really any idea what it looks like. I know I don't. I'm sure most of the council doesn't. Maybe you have some ideas, but they haven't gone through the vetting process like the parades have done here in the city. Like the Veterans Day Parade, the Memorial Day Parades, those were, you know, council-inspired. Those were through cups of coffee, through several meetings. That it took a little bit of time. It wasn't someone's idea or the staff's idea. It was the elected official's idea that we continue forward with this, or that we just do it in general. The last parade that we had that was hard to know what to call it, but it wasn't successful. It just wasn't. There were a lot of complaints that came out of it, and that's what happens when you kind of fly off the cuff or just do it too quickly, too fast, without the proper vetting.
Are you referring to the Hispanic Heritage Month parade that happened in September?
Correct.
That was not our event, just to be clear on that. That was not a city event.
Well, if they're going to do it on Main Street in Mill Creek, it's our event. We own it. Just like the council members here owned all the complaints from the merchants and employees and whatnot. So it's, if we're going to have that discussion, everything's relative, right? So while I don't... It's not that I don't support Mill Creek Days at some point, perhaps in the future, but it requires planning and the proper vetting through the council. That's my two cents.
I want to comment on all three. Number one, since you presented these, I know there's been a little bit of information that's been posted on the website. People have had a chance to see it, and I've directed some people to go to it, and I've gotten a lot of feedback and looked at it a lot and thought about it. I personally love the idea of the Mill Creek Days. I love the celebration of Mill Creek. This is a personal opinion. I like the involvement of our town center and our businesses and other entities that would get involved. If your you feel your people could coordinate it, you wouldn't say that unless you could pull it off. So I have all faith in you that you could pull it off. That being said, the interesting thing about it is there's this funky little element about the parade, you know, mixing in here on this. I don't know if I'm not supportive of the parade element. It's almost like it's kind of added in there to make up for taking away the Memorial Day parade. May not be the answer. It's an opinion. It's just a, you know, it's an observation. There's all this debate about the Memorial Day parade. This is not a reason to parade down Main Street. This is a honoring of the people who've made the ultimate sacrifice, and it's a quiet and solemn and serious element. I will tell you, though, John, too bad. You put on a great parade. People love it, and it's well known in our city. And I think it's always funny when you stop something, it sends a message. And I hope that it won't send the wrong message to not have a Memorial Day parade. And so I'm still supportive of having a Memorial Day parade. I understand and respect everyone's opinion about not really something to jump up and down. But, well, I'll tell you, the parade, I think, does celebrate those individuals who have made the ultimate sacrifice. It does pull our community together. But I love the Mill Creek Days events, celebrations. And I know that with your involvement with the businesses, this could be huge, could be a centerpiece of our year. So I believe very strongly in that one. So I do support Mill Creek Days. Everyone's got an opinion. My opinion on the parade is I think we should keep the Memorial Day parade, only because I think it would send the wrong message. Now that we've established it, people expect it. Actually, our citizens enjoy it. The attendance is good. I think it would be a tough thing to take it away. But that's just one guy's opinion. The issue that I really got to let go of is the farmer's market. I still think that we have such a chance to have a great farmer's market, and we keep crippling ourselves, I feel, with some of the dates that we choose because of the individuals we have that are telling us that they have to be on these certain days in order to get the vendors here. A Tuesday from 3 to 7, I don't know if I'd rather go back to the Friday 12 to 5. It's not that much better of a date. Two extra hours, middle of the week. Farmers markets are historically on Fridays and Saturdays because that's when people want to go shopping. And that's why those are tough dates. That's the date of the greatest attendance. So I know you and I have tried to make contact with the Pike Place Market, and since our last meeting, we have reached out, but they have not responded. You know, just they're not going to have the quick turnaround time. So that being said, I'm really, for all the hard work we put into that farmers market, I wish we could find a way to put a date that would be convenient to the citizens of Mill Creek. Somehow put on a farmers market that is a time that works for the people, not for the farmers. I think it would be far more successful. Got to commend you on the Mill Creek Days. I think you're onto something really big there, though. That's it.
I'm thinking back to the great work that our beautification board and some community members did to bring the veterans or the memorial, Veterans Memorial to the Library Park a number of years ago. And the first year we had that, we had a great ceremony there that was somber and reflective and honored those who had given the ultimate sacrifice. And as an old timer, that sticks in my mind as what's important to do on Memorial Day, and I've really enjoyed that. And to be honest, the first time we had a parade on Memorial Day, I was affronted by that. It's hard for me to switch gears and say this is a time to have a festive thing where people come to parades, and we got this argument or discussion recently about do we throw candy or what do we do to celebrate? And to be honest, I struggle with the Memorial Day parade, and to be honest, I don't really enjoy that. I enjoy the parade, but I have a hard time with the juxtaposition of a somber memorial versus a festive event. So when we started the Veterans Day parade, it made a lot more sense. Let's honor all of our veterans. That is a festive thing that makes sense. And so that made sense to me. And I don't remember the history very well. I don't know when we got started with two parades, but despite someone's comment earlier about, you know, council's vision was to have two parades, that's not my vision. It has not been my vision. This idea of Mill Creek Days, I think this is a great compromise. I think it's a great new direction to go. We have come from a small city where we had no events to a little bit larger city where we had some events to an opportunity for lots of events. And I see this as an opportunity to have one more event. We got Mill Creek Days, pick the middle of May. I can work with that. A couple weeks later, we've got a somber event called Memorial Day Celebration. later on, we've got Run the Mill, we've got the festival, we've got, you know, lots and lots of things going on, lots of opportunities on different weekends, different days, different kinds of things to bring more people to Mill Creek. As a city of 20,000, having one more different thing makes sense to me. I'm really in favor of the Mill Creek Days. The more I've thought about it, I think that makes a lot of sense. As a, if we want to have a springtime parade, let's put it on that week. But this, it's a week to celebrate what's about Mill Creek, and I think it's an opportunity for people to step up and do things. I really like this idea of day of service at the end of it, where it's not just an observer event; it's an opportunity for people to get engaged. I think if you give people a chance to come out and do something, that will be memorable. Events and participative activities are much more memorable and much more valued by people than observational events. And so I like the idea behind Mill Creek Days and making it something people can participate in. So I'm in favor of moving the parade, a springtime parade, to Mill Creek Days, and going back to a somber event, Memorial Day event, that's just at the Memorial in Library Park. In Farmers Market, I'm kind of with Councilmember Stetcher. I think we're struggling. I think we've been struggling. You know, lots of other people have successful farmers markets. Friday afternoon or Tuesday, neither one of them is just really exciting. And I don't know how to solve that. If you could find some other exciting way to make that happen, that'd be great. But I think having a kind of a halfway event is just a lot of work for staff. Even though you have a market manager, it means moving cars, it means the police thinking different things, it means lots of work.
Okay. Well, I like the farmers market. I went to every one, and I like the idea of it being open later so I don't have to take vacation time to work from work to go visit it. I would love it if it was a Saturday, but it's not going to happen. We are in no way competitive with the other cities. And in fact, it takes years to get these started, to get people coming. We have to prove ourselves to the vendors and the farmers. They don't have anything to prove. They've got all the places in the world they want to go to. So we have to prove ourselves, and we haven't done it yet. You know, it's could take a couple more years, but I'm willing to give this a try, and if it does it, I'm willing to give the Tuesdays from 3 to 7 a try, and if it doesn't work, we'll change it next year. You know, we can do that. People asked us for this. I would hope that all the people that asked us for it would be more supportive and show up, and maybe if they're not, this isn't something we need to do. So, but I personally like it. And I also want to keep the Memorial Day Parade. My father was a veteran. It is a somber event, but I also believe in celebrating the lives of the people who made the ultimate sacrifice. And so if there were more information about Mill Creek Days, if there was a program, you know, maybe you move it up and the last day of Mill Creek Days is the Memorial Day Festival. I'm willing to consider it when there's a lot more flesh on the bone than there is here. But until then, I feel strongly about keeping the Memorial Day Parade. I believe our residents like it. I had people coming up to me saying, hey, why are you doing this? We like this. We think this is, well, because we don't have a full program to offer them an alternative right now. And I do believe that's what our residents want, and I feel strongly about it, at least for this year, moving forward. So,
I add one more comment, Bob.
What?
Can I weigh in one more piece of thing to think about in this whole mix of events? So tonight we heard feedback that perhaps some of the other parades that happen during the year are challenging, and I guess we're going to own them as the city, even though they're not our events. So if you are not going to proceed with a community parade, then I would like to understand your thoughts on how we respond to groups like the one I got today asking about a parade again in the fall. Because, again, this is your decision for us, but we need that feedback on how to proceed. And that was our compromise, was to have an event that we could have all those different groups come together instead of having one-offs that disrupt a little bit more.
I would need more information. I mean, I can't just sit here tonight and say, oh, yeah, I mean, staff's going to put all this stuff into a week for Mill Creek Days, which sounds good, but there isn't a whole lot of substance yet. And I just think it needs to have more discussion with the council. And, you know, I'm willing to look at it for next year. That's me.
On other parades, correct me if I'm wrong, Scott or Bob, but that's not really, I mean, that's, someone has the right to apply for a street use permit and have a parade down the city street, don't they?
That's true. You do have a code provision regarding use of public streets for celebration or parades, and we would look at the code and what's being proposed in terms of approving that.
Yeah, so I'm not sure that's a discussion necessarily for us, because that's a matter of code if someone applying for a street use permit. But I appreciate your confidence. But, I mean, I just look at it from, you know, the athletic event. We're 4 months out, and to have a successful athletic event, whether it's a bike race, a run, what have you, doesn't it have to be advertised and promoted? And, I mean, that's why I'm struggling with trying to pull this off this year. I appreciate the confidence, and I like the concept. I want to move forward with it. I'm just not convinced we can do it in 4 months and have it as successful as we want it to be. I don't know. It's just my opinion.
I think the Mill Creek Days, you basically had everything, including the kitchen sink here in this little piece right here. So I don't know if you're going to be able to do, if you really are thinking of doing every single one of those things, because that is a lot, and I know you need a decision to move forward to even determine that. But I wonder, you know, you have an idea, which I think is a great idea. The negatives I'm hearing is, can you pull off the whole thing? Can you start out running with this humongous event with all these different elements? You could do a number of these, maybe a few of these, but we could start out with a Mill Creek Days event, right? That, you know, once you flesh out the ones that can be done, can be accomplished within the timelines, I think that starts the process for it. Maybe what would be challenging is to do the whole thing the first year. Maybe there are a few elements of this with the town center, with the merchants, that we could pull off. I know you could pull off, and your staff could pull off. Maybe not all of these, athletic event and everything else. I think we need a little bit more information. Maybe just one more time with you to kind of say, you know, give us a more complete version of Mill Creek Days, a reduced version, more complete with details, but a few events that you know you could pull up. We could start with. I think the parade is a big issue. You're right. I think it's going to. You know, it's kind of hard to make a vote on this thing because everybody's got different opinions on it. But I do hate to see you not move ahead with Mill Creek Days. I do want to take one comment, though, Mayor, with all due respect, is that my concern on the farmers' markets, if we keep doing these dates that are difficult to attend, I don't want to set a reputation that you can't do a farmers' market in Mill Creek because nobody will come. And I think that's the concern I have on continuing to do farmers' markets on dates that aren't. I mean, people can't afford to take vacation time to come down and get it. And even Tuesday, early evening, it's going to be a real challenge. I think that's, I know we've got a community that wants it. It's just, I don't know how we can pull it off on a date that would be convenient for the community. That's my concern is, I don't want to set a bad reputation. You know, great town, Mill Creek, but they will not go to a farmer's market. You know, that's not true. It's just, it wasn't convenient, I think. My extra two thoughts. I'm done.
Well, we initially set this up for a motion, but I think the motion would be, if you were to make one, not that I'm asking for one, just to repeat what I've heard from the council, is that the only change that we will make from 2018 and 2019 will be changing the farmers market date.
Is there a chance that you can find out more, like the type of
I would like to thank Councilmember Stackler. Made some good comments. Mayor Pro Tem also did. Thinking back to the events I've done, you're right. It takes a year to plan a day of caring event. It takes a year to plan things. And so I appreciate staff's willingness to take on Mill Creek Days. But maybe there's a way to nibble away at this. And I'm opposed that we use the event that's already there. Gold Creek Church is going to have their Day of Hope event. And Mill Creek Business Association, or Council and Business Association, sounds like they've had some interest in this. And so maybe there's a way to coalesce some of the things that we have. And it becomes the skeleton on which we add more flesh as time goes on. So kind of ease our way into this. And so go ahead and target that week for a couple of things. Pick a couple that you think will be successful, where you're going to get other groups to do a lot of the work, but you guys are going to do some coordinating and coalescing. And then we don't call it Mill Creek Days yet, so we don't set expectations too high, but we start working on some stuff in the middle of May, and then maybe we're set up for next year to say, let's have an opportunity for community events to come forward, community groups to come forward, have a parade. Let's have more events that week, and maybe we can revisit the how many parades we have in Mill Creek next year. Thanks.
Yeah, I just wanted to add, I would be all for giving staff direction to start planning for the 2020 event now. I mean, start putting together the partnerships, and so over the next 9 months, 10 months, we can put that flesh on the bone and see what the plan is and who's all involved. And I want to do it. I'd rather not do it this year. But I'm all for it. I think it's a great idea.
Just that, I think that's likely a discussion I'll need to have with staff to determine what is the staff capability to do more events rather than the same number. What was initially proposed was reduction of staff time for a parade in exchange for more activities on Mill Creek Days. If we're still continuing to talk about in the future two parades plus Mill Creek Days, I just haven't had that discussion with them yet to determine if, so I don't want to set that expectation that we can do more of this in the future. Unless we're willing to reduce some other area. So it's a larger discussion that council needs to have with staff in regards to resources that are available to put on these types of events.
And Joni, we had some questions about like the new signage and stuff. We reached out to ask for input from the community. Have we done that with regards to the Memorial Day Parade and the Veterans Day Parade and asked our citizens what they feel?
In a backhanded kind of way, because the Mill Creek View posted an article the day after our council meeting last time, before we had this benefit of discussion, which prompted some inaccurate information we had to quickly rectify online. Through that, we were able to share it across social media and get a lot of input. And once people understood that we were not simply throwing those who died in service out the window and not trying to honor them, the consensus was generally, we support this. We understand what you're trying to do. You're still honoring people. We appreciate what you're doing. There is excitement from our business community, in particular in Mill Creek Days. We had our monthly meeting today with the Mill Creek Town Center Business Association, where they expressed interest in that as well, and also in the interest of trying to reduce the number of other one-off parades through Town Center. So we've received different feedback on it.
But not in a way where we reach out and ask for public opinion in a, like you've done before with the website and such, and got a good, strong sampling of.
Right. It's the cart and the horse.
Yeah.
We don't want to get out in front of the council and asking people opinion before the council's discussed it when you might say no. So it kind of leaves us
in a dilemma. Plus, though, if we had more imp with the council, the time issue. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Yeah.
Lots of planning, citizen input, your advisory groups. You know, there's time.
I'm just thinking input about the veterans and memorial. What do our citizens want? My concern of sending a wrong message. We're going to cut the parade. We don't care. I don't want to do that. But I think you're right. I think it's, Jenny, I think it's more like, these are some neat ideas. We need like a year of additional time to make changes like this. That we want to make, our concern of making the wrong changes. These might be all correct. We just don't know.
Is that enough?
Yes, I think the direction was clear.
Okay, next up is
That's correct. Actually, the chief's going to take the next two agreements, but you're right. The first is a prosecutorial services agreement. And chief?
Yes, Mayor, it is. Good evening, Council. This is essentially a successor contract for prosecutor services. We contract with private law firm Zacher Thomas. It's a local law firm that contracts with a number of cities in Snohomish County for prosecutor services. We've been a client of Zacher Thomas for a number of years, and this new contract represents a successor agreement with just a couple of notable changes. During the past year, we've utilized Zacher Thomas on some of our asset seizure and forfeiture processes, kind of on a one-off option. We've memorialized that in the contract, so they have a base rate that they'll charge us, and then additional fees should those forfeiture proceedings go to court and outside of a hearing examiner, and that's reflected in here. Also, there's been the addition of what's called an extreme risk protection order, which is a new protection order that's available to law enforcement, the courts, but also victims of domestic violence cases. Any of those three can work through an extreme risk protection order, which is a quick way to remove guns from a house in domestic violence cases where there's a realistic concern that guns may be used. Extreme risk protection orders are fairly new and very complicated to get through court, and so we've memorialized in our contract with Zacher Thomas that they'll provide us with that service should we get there. It's above and beyond your standard everyday domestic violence protection order, and it requires a lot of work on the part of lawyers and the investigators. So we've memorialized that as well. And we increased the liability insurance that Zacher Thomas will maintain for our cases from $1 million to $2 million. And there is an addition in the cost of retaining Zacher Thomas. It's gone up this year. It will go up again 4% next year and 4% the year after that. And that's consistent with the cost of retaining lawyers. There are very few options in Snohomish County for prosecutor services, and Zacher Thomas has provided us a good service up to this point, and we're confident that they'll continue to be responsive to our needs. Some of the things they do for us, they provide some extra training for our police officers. They're available on nights and weekends, excuse me, to review applications for search warrants, and we get a good service from them. So this just is a continuation of something that we've done in a relationship we've had for a number of years. And I'll entertain any questions on that.
Thanks for the presentation, Chief. You know, didn't bullets on there, what would you do in lieu of using these folks?
We would have to seek somebody else to provide that service for us. And that would be a contract either way. Whether we were able to work with the county prosecutors, again, that would have to be an ILA with costs associated with it, or another private law firm with costs associated with it.
Asset forfeiture support kinds of things just hasn't been part of the contract before, but how have we done that?
It's been really hit and miss in the couple of years that I've been here. I've asked that we be very wary and cautious about any asset seizure and forfeiture because we didn't have this kind of legal support in place. For the last year plus, we've been kind of one-off with Zacher and Thomas. They provided this service to us included in the fee that we've been paying them, but you get what you pay for. So we got just the minimal amount of service when it was really necessary. We've worked with the firm for the last year on several forfeiture cases, and we're getting a really good service. I'm comfortable with what they're providing for us.
The thing is, you know, one hand, we like fixed contracts because it's easy to budget for them.
Sure.
Flat price. If we look at our volume of work they do for us, you know, dollars per hour, is this a good value for the city buying a fixed pile of stuff? Are there ever months where nothing goes on and And they're playing Maytag repair.
Yeah, so the fixed amount, I think, is $9,053 per month that we pay for retainers, and that gets prosecutors in court every day for our cases, whether those be traffic tickets or they be misdemeanor arrests. Any of our felony prosecutions go through the Snohomish County Prosecutor's Office. So they deal with our domestic violence, DUI, thefts, shoplifts, nuisance violations, and then all of our traffic tickets. So we get prosecutorial representation every day at South District Court, and sometimes also at the Everett District Court, should that it go that way. So we get good service on that. The service they provide for the support for asset seizure and forfeiture is completely hit and miss. Depends on how the cases go. We may have a number of cases in a row that involve some seizure and forfeiture items, and we may go months without any. And so those months that we go without any, we don't pay for those, and that's why we set this kind of base fee at $300 and then a kind of a standard fee for anything that goes, an hourly fee that anything goes beyond that. Correct. In most instances, they're drug forfeitures. We occasionally have forfeitures that involve perhaps weapons used in the commission of felonies, and we can forfeit those for the purposes of destruction. But most of ours and everything that we've done recently has been related to drug asset seizure and forfeiture.
So what we need is a motion to authorize the city manager to execute a contract with Zachar
and Thomas.
Aye.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Council. Again, this is essentially a successor agreement, although the one that we're succeeding hasn't been in place all that long. We have been in an ILA with Snohomish County Department of Emergency Management since the dissolution of ESCA, and I think that ILA was originally signed with Snohomish County in early 2016, so we're rolling right around to a three-year deal, and again, it's essentially a successor agreement. There's been a lot of work done at Snohomish County Department of Emergency Management as they've kind of grown into a bigger organization. They put together a group or a committee that represented cities and jurisdictions from throughout Snohomish County to look at this standard ILA that they enter into with all of the participating cities. There were a few modifications made to that, a couple of key changes involved the Schedule A and Schedule C to kind of align efforts throughout the county to make sure that everything's being done the same. Also to provide some standards for training for staff and make sure if we have to come together to manage an emergency, people are speaking the same language and working off of the same document, and so we can help manage that regional or countywide emergency more efficiently. The great thing that we found with emergency management is there's ongoing dialogue. We're continually working on finding better ways to do what we do and look for areas of improvement. So although that Schedule A and Schedule C were modified to represent what's the best thing going on right now, we know that moving forward in this agreement that we'll continue to look for those efficiencies. Schedule A provides for the basic services that DEM will provide to the city. Schedule B is elective services, and that is a new element to this ILA, and there are a number of elective services that the city, our city, or any city may or may not choose to elect to receive from emergency management. Those are above and beyond, and they include exercises, tabletops or actual exercises, and a number of things that I can answer but don't need to go into unless you want to know. Interesting thing about that is there's no cost associated as you look at that Schedule B. That was my first question is, well, it's how much is that going to cost us? Because we might want to do that. The answer from emergency management is there's a certain sliding scale associated with that, depending on, for example, with exercises, the depth and magnitude of the exercise, whether it's tabletop, whether it's actual, how many organizations are involved, and how big of a deal it becomes. We don't anticipate at this time electing any of those services, but that is something, again, as we continue to look at our emergency management partnership, we might want to do. Should we get to a point where we need to elect one of those services in Schedule B, we'll evaluate how important it is, we'll evaluate how much it's going to cost, and then we'll make a determination of whether or not that's something we can do within our budget, or is it of such a magnitude that we would need to come back to council for. The other change is the assessment method for how much this costs. And there had been a method in place that has been adjusted, and I explained a little bit of that in the agenda summary. It's not overly complicated, but it's a little bit complicated. But the bottom line is what it's going to cost us is just a little bit over $25,000. We anticipated that amount of money for 19 and 20 as we put together our budget, and so it's within what we can afford. And I'll entertain any questions. Some new staff, they're doing some new things. Emergency management learned a lot from the OSO incident, and those lessons continue to be felt every day and every month when we get together as an advisory board or any of the groups. And specifically, one issue that we're looking to continue to develop is kind of a standardization of emergency management capabilities in all of the cities around here, and we brought to you in our CIP a project to create our EOC in the building next door, and we'll be moving forward with that this year, and we'll do that in conjunction with best practices and what are other cities doing, what are neighboring cities doing, how's that going to work with the county, so we can support each other, work with each other, and they can work with us and support us. And so that's kind of what I'm getting at. That bullet point is this will exist this way. A year from now, it'll be better.
When the funding on this, first of all, a couple, when we get to the contracts that have it, that comes to the end of this. Maryville and Offer on it, Offer's came down over.
Well, that's my understanding. That's a little bit closer relationship with King County and the folks down there.
And Maryville is just doing one of them.
Yep. They have a tendency to do that.
And then the funding of this, it looks like this is kind of a capita sort of thing. Like I said, it's calculated, if I'm reading this right, calculated on the entire county department budget minus the director and accounting analyst, and everyone else will do that in the city.
Yes. So the director and the accounting analysis analyst, the Snohomish County presumes that whether or not we're involved or any cities involved, they're going to have those people, so that's a cost they just have to have. If they're going to have an emergency management department, no matter what happens anywhere in the county,
we're going to have those two people. So the county is absorbing the cost of that or taking responsibility, rightfully so, for the cost of that. And then all of the other expenses are spread out across the participating organizations.
The participating organizations are the city, the three tribes, but I don't see the county themselves taking part of this. Are they going to be
That's it. They're the show in Snohomish County, and the rest of us sign on to their program. There are a lot of infrastructure charges, a cost associated with that, the building and the maintenance and all those things that go into that. But yeah, they're basically it, and we're signing on to their show. The Department of Emergency Management, the Snohomish County DEM, has their organization. And I have some experience in county government, and there's a lot of interfund billing that goes on for the lights and water and gas and IT support and all those kinds of things. And to what extent DEM receives money from the Snohomish County Council to cover all of those interfund costs, I can't tell you. What I do know is that Snohomish County Council gives DEM enough money to cover the costs of their director and their financial analyst, and beyond that, I don't know to what depth or what level they fund, how much it costs to turn the lights on in the building and keep the computers running, and those types of things. It's equitable. The formula is equitable. If you can abide by how the formula is established on the per capita, then it's equitable because those costs are split amongst all the participating agencies. I can't answer for you how much more they pay, how much more the Snohomish County Council puts into the DEM budget every year for costs above and beyond the director and the financial analyst. I don't know.
Without this money and just those two people, the answer to me is probably
I don't think so. I can't answer that question because I don't know. As I mentioned,
how do they get to the numerator, I guess, is the question.
The total of all these, how do you get to that numerator? Is that a number that would be the city's collectively fair share of what they're doing beyond what the county would do on their own?
The municipal agreement doesn't specify to that depth or that level on what is Snohomish County actually paying. How much money is the county council allocating to DEM? This agreement doesn't specify that. And I don't know. This is again essentially a successor agreement. It's comparable other than the change in the formula. And I don't have that right now, what we paid them last year. I do know this is comparable to what we had done in the previous two-year agreement.
Comparable in service?
Yes. And comparable in service, too. This is a clean document, but but it's comparable in service. Prior to that, Wayne Brand participated in an organization that no longer exists, and I have no historical perspective of that at all.
Prior City Hall, and I think they had a radio. Yeah, so we decided at that time that there was a fight not to do it because they wanted to keep control, but clearly this was, they couldn't do anything to help anybody. The only hope we had was if there's a major event, and I would have to look at the county budget to see what they were doing, but quite honestly, although I share your concerns, this is the only game in town.
I cannot tell you that either. I don't know. Having visited their facility a few times, you know, there's a couple dozen folks up there, and what they have in the field, I don't know. It's a pretty big building with lots of computers and TV screens and trucks and cars and people. It's a fairly healthy organization, but, you know, perhaps not more than a couple dozen folks completely.
I don't question the allocation, but I think I see your point is when the city contracts with the sheriff's office, for instance, you know that there they need to add a deputy or two to deal with this. So you know what's being added to the department for the additional services they're contracting. We don't have the context to know what would the county be providing if no one was contracting with them. That's where
I would presume a director, a financial analyst, a building, and a truck.
Probably.
And one ham radio.
But much like our, like you said, the county, just like the sheriff's office, we contract for, let's say, a drug task force. We know that entails detectives that buy the dope, buy money, the cars, the arrest, and all up into the jail space and prosecution costs, like you just looked at the city. But similar.
I don't see any reason not to move forward. It'd just be good to know next time this comes up exactly how they arrive at these calculations.
And I would suggest that this ILA with DEM is more akin to our retainer costs with Zachary Thomas than it is a contract for police services with the sheriff's office. That's a very specific thing. You know what you're going to get, how many cops, when, where, and how. This is a retainer. We could pay them $25,000 and change in 2019, and the only thing we'll get out of it is some training exercises and some consults on policy development and a rewritten CEMP.
Insurance policy.
Or we may have them come to town and help us with something major.
I think we should go ahead with this.
I do understand your question, and I will find out more specific information and share that with council.
Just because at some point I would like to have some people asking tough questions about their budget overall, because I don't want this another year to go, oh, they decided to add a whole bunch, and of course the cities are paying for all of it. The county just goes, great, we doubled the DEM department, and our assessments all double, and the county is still paying the same as they were. I mean, I'm looking for equity and looking for some control. Some people asking some hard questions along the way. And so I don't know if there's a board. Because this is a county department.
There's an advisory board for DEM, and we've had great participation with the advisory board over the last couple of years, but one of the reasons that we brought the deputy chief of police on was to take on emergency management functions for the city, and in the last year he's been very active and involved in the advisory board and all aspects of emergency management. Kind of what I alluded to in the agenda summary is that a group representing cities and tribes got together to review this ILA for edits and the things that were brought to you today. And so that's a byproduct of that type of collaborative work. But there is an advisory board. The ILA specifies who, what, where, when, and how. And there are two things that the city manager is responsible for. And so we make assignments based on that to make sure that we are fairly represented on that group.
Our deputy chief is our advisory board member.
Yep.
Second. The motion and the second.
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you, Council.
Okay, next up is appointment of a community interview panel for the city manager. I talked to Bob about this. I'm not sure how many of you picked your community person or have been able to contact people who are available.
So, Mayor, before we launch into that, let me just provide another option for Council's consideration. You remember when we initially talked about this at the last meeting, Council was going to bring forward a member and plus some alternates so that 5 to 7 community members would serve on a panel, and that was anticipated to be on a panel that would occur on March 22nd, which concurrently with the other interviews that were going on that day. But an alternative would be that community panel could exist and could conduct its meetings on the same day that Council conducts its interviews concurrently, to the extent that that might provide more opportunities for citizens to be involved on a Saturday rather than an all-day event, 8:30 to 9 o'clock till 4:30 on the 22nd. So I wanted to introduce that to Council as an option, to the extent that made a difference on who you might bring forward to suggest and to appoint to a community panel.
I like the idea. Either that or do the community panels on Friday afternoon.
Because the panels were initially designed in not wanting to have a 12-hour day for the candidates, you'd want to start the community panels no later than 1 o'clock so that they could be completed, for example, by 6 if you had 5 interviews, since only part of them would be concurrent then. It would still make a very long day. The best scenario would be to either have the community panel simultaneously starting as all the other interview panels start at 8:30 or at 9, or do the community panel simultaneously as the council interviews on the 23rd.
So, Bob, if we did the council interviews, so what we've done in the past is we have the council all together interviewing an individual candidate, and then we all did one-on-ones with the candidate, with each candidate.
So I think that's still something we haven't really discussed, how the council wants to interview the candidates. Collectively, obviously, it was presumed, but whether or not you want to do one-on-one would add another complication or at least a logistical issue to work out if we also had a community panels that same day.
Does the consultant have a recommendation?
He hasn't provided one to me. If he has, I've seen it work both ways. What I'm suggesting is if you run a community panel on the same day that you do your council panels, that's easily administered, but to also throw in 7 individual interviews will draw out that day to be very long and lengthy.
Any consideration to having the community members do the interview as a panel, as a group?
I thought that's what they were doing.
Yeah, that's what I didn't realize we were contemplating these individuals doing individual interviews.
Well, no, there would be a group of 7 or 5 community members doing individual interviews with one candidate at a time.
Okay.
But if there's 5 candidates, that's 5. The group of 7 meets with each other.
Yeah. That's 5 hours of interviews, 1 hour lunch. You may be able to reduce some of this time frame, and then an hour debrief. So it's a pretty full day. And if you're not running them again concurrently with other interviews, you're lengthening out the day for the candidates to something probably unmanageable with a 10 or 12 hour day then.
I just wanted to make a comment on the date. I'm okay either way, but I had a tremendous response to this from the community. I have my 1, plus I have 5 alternates, so I have a total of 6 people.
Get your own panel.
And they're a great mix of people. I have 2 that are full-time. They're willing to take a day off of work to come in and do this because they felt it was very important. 2 of them are retired. 3rd one also works, pardon me. And 1's a stay-at-home. And 1 is a individual who works at home, works out of their home, so they have a virtual office. They can take the day off. I was really surprised with the diversity I was able to find. I've got young and old. I've got different diversity in regards to age, income, sexual orientation, and race. So I've got a good mix of people that I was really quite pleased with. I think, you know, if it helps you, I think we could do it on the 22nd. If not, we could move it. Whatever's easiest for us to execute. But I was really surprised. One of the individuals even has a background in a retired government employee, one of my retirees. So they've got a good mix of background. I was really pleased with the quality of people and the age and other elements, too. So I think we could do it if that's what you're looking for. If it make it easier for the council, for the candidates, we could. I think we could swing a panel on the 22nd.
Logistics thought on this. One of the things you want to do is when these panels get done, you want the panels to, whether they staff or community members, you need to, have to somehow debrief and come up with strengths and weaknesses, not a ranking of the people. It's not strengths and weaknesses, but that needs to get either written down in a fashion that we can read it, or somebody has to represent that to us. And if you do that on Saturday, the complexity of getting that integrated in with all the other stuff we're going to be doing if we're interviewing them, you've got to be careful you've got that coordinated so we don't have these people spend a bunch of their day evaluating the candidates and then we don't get a good chance to debrief with them somehow. So,
how about later on Friday, like if they're done at 5, we meet at 6 and talk to them?
Well, I think what Councilmember Todd was suggesting is if you did your community panel on the Saturday, the same day that you have your council interviews, is this logistically it's a little more complicated to make sure you get all the information you need to make a decision about who the finalists are. We'll build to debrief all the panels that occur on Friday, so and that you'll have the written materials by Saturday or by Friday evening.
Well, Friday works better, and if John's got some people, to be honest, I thought about this, and I thought I had some great ideas, and I thought, who do I want to stick with this response stick, as in, this is a lot of work for somebody. And then I also thought, it's just a lot of work for somebody, you know. So I was happy doing it with staff, with the panels you've already got, and with us. I thought that was adequate. But if John's got some good ideas and some volunteers are willing to do it, I'm willing to entertain that.
I mean, Friday does provide you more options. It provides you the option of Saturday of having certainly one-on-one interviews, group interviews, as well as multiple interviews with one candidate to the extent that you can decide on maybe two semifinalists that you want to further interview. You have that option on that Saturday.
And actually have people stay over an extra day just in case.
That's true. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Are you talking all day on Friday or half day? For the citizen,
I think it'd be easier logistically if they could do it. It's run them concurrently when all the other interviews start. But if you can't find a community panel that's unable to serve unless it's from 1 o'clock on, then that's the next alternative. It'll just mean that some of the interviews will be concurrent, but some of them will not, and then you're going to start encroaching on into that. Community event that we're also wanting to hold on Friday evening. So it just makes it more difficult. And of course, if you only have 3 candidates interview, it becomes a very easy situation to handle. But if you have 5 candidates or even 6 candidates, it becomes very, very complicated and probably unable to do it in a one-day time frame. So a long way of saying that my preference would be to give you more options to do it concurrently, run them all day, rather than start it at 1 o'clock. So what brought us here was whether or not council was prepared and wanting to establish the community panel this evening if you have your members, or at a subsequent meeting.
Council get enough to make a panel.
Okay. Does council want to reaffirm those, or just simply go with the names that each of you send?
I think the idea was for us to vote on it. I think the idea was for each of us to pick a person.
Okay.
I'll have to confirm with my person that he can do the whole day.
Maybe you can borrow some from council members.
I don't want to John.
Is that clear?
You've got one and some alternates. Is there a way to?
Why don't you talk to him and pick one?
I think what's nice is I have a mix of the types of individuals, like some retirees, some working. One's a 35-year-old engineer or 38-year-old engineer. So depending on what the other candidates are from the citizens, we could flesh this group out so it's very diverse and represents a lot of different types of individuals. And I think that would be good. Message from the community depending on who else you guys have, we can use this list to flesh out the ones that might give it a more balanced look. Sound good?
Yeah, the backups were the bent two of you, three of you had the same name. That, if that's the council's wishes, yes, that would be, we can make that work.
Okay,
right, that's all we have this evening. Thank you, Mayor. Council.
Okay, so next up is the consent agenda. We have payroll and benefit ECH payments in the amount of $103,108.14.
Audit committee, council members Todd and Steckler. Any exceptions?
Exceptions.
And City Council meeting minutes of October 2nd, 2018. Do we have a motion to approve the consent? We have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Passes unanimously. Now we're down to reports. Let's see, just two quick things. One is we, with the passing of Jerry Smith of Montlake Terrace, whose memorial was re-elected Briar Mayor Bob Colinas to replace him. I moved from the third alternate to the first alternate. So if any of the three members don't go, I'm up. And then I attended my first meeting of the statewide E911 Advisory Board, and I've been already asked if I want to move up to the voting position. I have to say that this was an amazing collaborative group, unlike I've seen in a while, and everybody was there for the best interests of the state. People asked lots of good questions. I have months of catch-up work to do. But these were some of the smartest people I've seen, and we're just really lucky to have them, and hopefully I'll fit in. So, yeah, it's from around the state. People flew in from Yakima for this meeting. And there's 30 people on the board, and there were double that number in the room. Lots of hours, and I can see where this is keeping up with technology is going to be really important. Plus, there's going to be grant opportunities, so kind of excited. With that, Councilmember Steckler?
I have a quick comment that I want to make sure and get onto the record for everybody and for my fellow council members, the audience, citizens, and staff. Unfortunately, I have a conflict on February 5th that it's a business conference that I am under financial obligation to attend. I cannot get out of it, so I cannot be here on that date for our interviews. And I didn't want to send a message out to the public that I was not interested or that I didn't consider it extremely important, because I am extremely upset about the fact that I can't be here, especially since I was just appointed last year. But unfortunately, there isn't another date that's available, and I do apologize to that. It is the only council meeting that I have missed since I became appointed.
and it is unfortunate that it has to be this one, but I want to make sure that everyone goes on record of knowing I'm not trying to send a message here. I am very, very sorry. I would very much want to be a part of that. So my apologies to everyone.
Something from the heart. My son called me this afternoon in tears. A friend of his had passed away from a heroin overdose this morning. So thank you, Heather, for what it is you're doing.
Advisory committee are well respected by other folks, and we're looking for, I think they're looking at, is there some efficiency in having those groups overlap or commingle or work together on both advocacy kinds of things as well as technical stuff, and so I think they're starting that conversation. So she made a good presentation last week and kind of floating the idea. They're getting the group together to kind of kick it around and brainstorm. Second thing was, if people didn't see it in the Herald this morning, weighing on roads plans, Senator Hobbs has not put his name on the transportation package that he's been flying out there, but he's got it open for a public hearing on Thursday, and if he hears some good things, he might put his name on it and move forward. If he doesn't hear very many good things, he might just kind of shelve it for a while. This is a multi-year kind of process, but for Snohomish County, there's quite a few projects that are important to us that didn't end up on the original transportation package. And so if you're interested, please follow along and watch that. You can see it on TBW on Thursday afternoon at 3:30, I believe. Last one is that Snohomish County.
No reports, ma'am.
Will Nelson, 14925 29th Drive, Southeast Mill Creek. My previous comment on the police space at eGov was not intended to imply that I recalled much of it, only that just some words were exchanged. I think there was some lady here talking about it, complaining about the available space. Next item. I think Councilmember Cavallari hit it right on the nose when he talked about the candy drop for the kids at the parades. As somebody who's actually been in combat, I have a great affinity for veterans. My grandson, he likes to play Nerf gun wars with his buddies out in the park. He's 9 years old. And having seen some of the worst that mankind can provide his fellow man, I try and talk to him about this. But he's only nine. A nine-year-old boy only knows about what he's happy about and what he's sad about. I think it's quite fine to have a candy drop at the parades for the kids. when they grow up and it's their time, maybe they'll bring their kids. We can always teach the young ones about Solomon later when they have the ability to understand what that is about. But at the age of 9 and 10, they ain't got a clue. They don't understand. I tended to agree with Councilmember Todd's comment for a solemn ceremony in the morning. I think Mr. Todd would be quite surprised to learn that on some other subjects I agree with him more than I don't, especially on transportation. And that's about all I got. Thank you.
Scott, how long do you need?
I think up to 45 minutes.
Okay, so we should probably extend the meeting down to about 9:15. Up to. Do you have a motion?
Moved.
Second.
So we have a motion and a second to extend the meeting, council meeting, up to 9:15. And with that, we don't need to have a motion for the exec session, because we've already called it.
You've already called it. I don't think you mentioned that there would be no action taken.
Yes, there will be no action taken, and we are going to be in exec session starting at 8:28.
That's what I see.
Vote on the motion to extend the meeting.
Oh, yeah.
I made a motion and second, but I'm not sure whoever voted.
All in favor signify by saying
aye.